The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra with a festive feast of football. Liverpool follow their star to the Eastlands, but Lino proves very unwise man. At Hull, it's a wane in a major away win for United, while absence of Eddie Carroll means it's safe for Arsenal to go round their neighbours. We round up all the Boxing Day fun. Note the Paul Lambert Three Piggy Straw House analogy as Gale blows Villa away. Burp gently, then prepare to tuck straight into the next feast of football, featuring Chelsea Liverpool, West Ham West Brom, Newcastle Arsenal. There's a post and 35 shopping days left till the end of the transfer window. We ran out all the latest rumours as January hoes into view in this Football Weekly Extra. Hey everybody, I hope you've had a great time so far. And there's more good times around the corner as well, particularly in the next hour or so with Sean Ingle making his seasonal appearance.
Sean. Hello James.
Hi Sean. Hey, here's Raphael Honigstein.
Hey, hey.
Hey, 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 Jacob Steinberg.
Hey.
Yeah, it was quite a remarkable Boxing Day of action, wouldn't you say, Jacob?
It was incredible, yeah. So much happened.
So much happened. Mm. I've got a note here. Boxing Day, Barry wasn't the only thing stirring at the bottom of the table, because all three bottom sides won away. What were the odds on that happening with your Fulham and your Crystal Palace and Sunderland?
Well, Sunderland were, I think, 11-1. Fulham were 7-2, and I think Palace were about 4-1.
Beyond parody, Sean. Beyond
only parody. For you, James.
Yeah. So many crazy things to talk about. And of course, that's only just happened. There's another round coming up tomorrow. Saturday is just crazy. Crazy. But the terrific stuff. I think for a lot of people, the real treat was the Man City Liverpool performance, especially after that horrible Chelsea-Arsenal. I mean, horrible is a bit strong, really. But that very flat Chelsea-Arsenal back on Monday. This was intoxicating.
Yeah, no, the Arsenal-Chelsea game didn't live up to the hype, and this one certainly did. It's maybe the best game I think I've seen this season. Certainly the first half was just end-to-end. The quality was incredible at times, especially that move that Coutinho didn't finish when Liverpool
they're kind of just juggling the ball themselves.
That was amazing. It was, you know, like that was like Barcelona at their very best. Mm. That move would have been easily the goal of the season for me, but City were just that bit too strong. Liverpool, they've got almost what you'd say half a team, I guess, because they can't defend. They attack brilliantly, but from set pieces not so good, and to be caught out like they were just before half time with the counter attack and the goal, the keeper not covering himself in glory was quite poor.
But most times when you see Man City at home, it's pretty clear who the winner is. On this occasion, you felt Liverpool could have taken at least a point. On another day, they could even maybe have had the win.
Well, I agree they were worth a point and they had enough chances, and they were very unlucky with a couple of refereeing decisions. I think it is fair to point out that the Raheem Sterling offside one, that really is a goal that was stolen from them. Mm. And I mean, with the penalties, obviously once the referee got into the rhythm of not giving any of these, then you see more and more and more, and then you, at the end of the game you think, oh, we could have had 10, but I think that's more a reflection of the leniency that was shown to both teams throughout the game. And yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, the questionable defence worked for both sides. I think that's what made it so interesting. I think City still don't look a team who are entirely comfortable without the ball. Liverpool, physically, I think, are struggling, as Jacob said, when it comes to high balls and dead ball situations. But I came away from that game thinking Liverpool are actually probably even a better team than
I
thought they would be.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
What
no,
do you want
I
me to say?
If you're going to, you know, potentially even, could they be, you know, title winners?
I don't think so.
Okay. They dropped to fourth anyway. And Brendan Rodgers, he's very upset.
Yeah, I thought that was... I can see why he's upset, because, you know, as you said, he quite rightly was denied, you know, possibly two goals there. But to sort of blame... to blame the referee from Greater Manchester. I think Jacob was mentioned earlier when we were talking. From Bolton don't necessarily support
Here's
Manchester.
A tweet from Jacob Steinberg. Lee Mason was the referee last time Liverpool won at Man City and their winner was a penalty. Wind your neck in, Brendan, says podcasting's Jacob Steinberg.
As for Liverpool, I think we'll have a better idea when they play Chelsea
on Sunday.
I mean, it is almost the way Chelsea have been playing recently. They've sort of reverted back a little bit to type with slightly more defensively, not really giving much away. Interestingly, you know, we all know that Chelsea have never lost at home in the Premier League under Jose Mourinho.
Have they not?
We all know that, but when their original unbeaten run ended, which in October 2008, Liverpool were the team to do it.
It was Liverpool, was it?
It was Liverpool.
Right, there have been some really sparkling Liverpool-Chelsea, Chelsea-Liverpool clashes over the years, of course.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that even though Jose's unveiled his back-to-the-future defensive sit-back and soak it up and then hit him on the break, whatever it is, style of football, that this Liverpool side are going to add a little bit more. They'll add sparkle to the stick rather than another S word, no?
You'd hope so. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, but I think Chelsea are particularly good at dampening down teams, sort of, you know, attacking the land. So we'll see what happens.
Mm. We certainly will. That game coming up on Sunday. City will be hosting Palace the day before. It's so very tight now, Jacob. 3 points separating the top four. And 3 points separating the bottom four.
It's a little bit less tight than it was at the start of Boxing Day, because on Thursday it was 2 points separating the top five. But now it's 5 points, you know, because Everton lost surprisingly at home to Sunderland. Right. Yeah.
So it's expanding.
Yeah, suddenly a little bit of daylight.
Right. Okay. But I don't know. It looks tighter than ever to me.
But it's less tight than it was.
I know. It's an optical illusion. It just seems that more teams are kind of...
It's because Man United have closed in a little bit,
ooh,
haven't they?
Ooh, yeah. United. But I want to get a little bit more on this Chelsea-Liverpool clash.
Yeah.
Do we think that Liverpool have the means to... Having run Man City so very close to going to Stamford Bridge and ending Jose's run there?
No, because I don't think that he's going to lose at home. As well as Liverpool potentially can play. I think the problem for them, partly against City, was that all the chances fell to the likes of Sterling and Coutinho. None of them came to Suarez, who was actually creating more.
Hmm.
You think that if any of those chances had gone to Suarez, I don't think he actually had a shot inside the area yesterday. I think City handled him quite well. Company played well. And they need those chances to fall to him if they're going to get something from that game.
It was an enormous miss, that by Raheem Sterling. Not an easy ball, but at the same time...
He should have scored.
At this level, yeah. And Mignolet on the... Was it the second Man City goal?
A bit limp-wristed.
Yeah.
I think that's the second point, though, to make. Chelsea made five changes yesterday against Swansea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they will bring back pretty much their first team against Liverpool. Liverpool haven't got the squad to do that. And I think playing three games in the space of a week... while Chelsea have rested players and effectively a lot of them would have had 6 days rest, may make a difference too.
True, but at the same time, I think it was interesting that both Kompany and Pellegrini were talking about the fact that Liverpool have no international game, so they're obviously already thinking about that kind of challenge that might come from them simply because they have less games and might be a little bit more rested in between these games. It's obviously not so much of a factor right now, but could be when it comes back to February, March.
Mourinho said in the build-up to the Arsenal game, they didn't have a game for a week. He said it was a special week for us. I could train the team for a week, and it's like what Liverpool have every week, you know.
We certainly saw the effects of that in another sparkling performance. Well, what is this new direction he's taking? Is it just a temporary thing until...
Well, they conceded 10 goals in five games leading up to the Arsenal game, and so he brought back Mikel or Ramirez, whoever you want to say, and took out one of the attacking players. And instead of playing a 4-2-3-1, it was a 4-3-3, which was what we saw in the 2004-07 vintage, as it were, for Jose. And they really squeezed Arsenal and... You know, and then yesterday another clean sheet against Swansea.
Yeah.
He's going to 1-0 his way to the title.
Yeah. Mm. Roger, Rafa.
You don't sound very enthusiastic.
Well, I'm not, because it was so depressing on Monday. I mean, Arsenal, to be fair, had a lot of the blame themselves. Giroud with all the misses. I think the stats were something like 66 or 70% possession for Arsenal, but they only had two shots on target in the entire game.
I don't think they had any shots on target, did they?
Well, the official stats I saw
at the end, which you really...
at PLTV, I mean, with two, but I
actually thought that was a pretty good game simply because Chelsea came there with a game plan and executed it almost perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I think I certainly can appreciate it. And I think they played really, really well. If they had a bit more sharpness up front or a character of the Drogba stature who will take that half chance, as Jose called it, and convert it and make it into a goal, they would have won it, and I think we'd all be raving just how effective they were. just that goal was missing. The fear, of course, I think, is that this most entertaining of all Premier League title races, or at least living memory, will be spoiled eventually by the one team who gets the results and grinds them out.
I'm fascinated if Chelsea will buy a striker in the transfer window, because that's clearly what they need. It's Mourinho, what Mourinho goes on about
this morning,
all the
time. Higuain being their latest target,
which would be interesting. I mean,
it certainly would.
I guess if there's enough money thrown at Napoli.
Yeah, although Napoli did hang on to Cavani for a while before they decided to let him go. They got their money's worth, and I'm a little bit surprised at this notion that after only half a season they're willing to move him on, because they are so patently a much lesser team without him. They really do struggle without him in the side. But we'll talk more about the transfers perhaps later. Arsenal, though, had this really testing run of games that was supposed to determine exactly whether they were the same old Arsenal or a new improved Arsenal. It looked like we were heading towards the door marked same old Arsenal, because you had the draw with Everton followed by the defeat. Napoli, Man City and then Chelsea, and they weren't able to. And then they go behind to a goal from Carlton Cole, and what, an hour's played, and it just looks like all the old Gunners' problems are coming out. But Jacob, now, is it Arsenal with a real proof of character, or is it just that West Ham were a bit rubbish, so...
Well, I think the least you could say for them on Monday was that they didn't lose, whereas in the past they might have been fallen prey to a sucker punch from Chelsea, you know, late set piece or something like that. But I guess against West Ham they did need that comeback to get some vitality back into their season and, you know, go back top of the league as well. They are top as it stands, and I guess the thing is they had enough time to come back from that goal as well, and the way that it was back to the wall from pretty much the 55th minute or so, you just knew they were going to score, even though the equaliser was a bit crappy on the part of the West Ham goalkeeper Adrian. They got a little bit lucky in that Carlton
it was
Cole
rocky for Adrian. No,
Carlton Cole did miss a very good chance, because you know he's Carlton Cole to make it 2-0, and so did O'Brien and Jarvis as well. But Arsenal, over the if they'd lost that game, it would have been ridiculous. Given what they did before falling behind.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm interested. I mean, Walcott obviously scored a couple. I think he scored five now against West Ham. He scored more goals against West Ham than any other team in the Premier League.
But he's on fire, isn't he?
I wouldn't say that. But
he scored a couple against.
He flits in and out. He flits in and out.
I did think Man City as well.
I did think his header was impressive for the second. But I'm interested in Podolski. Now, I don't think Podolski is necessarily world class, but he does give Arsenal a little bit more directness and a little bit more oomph. And I think that's needed, and he has scored five goals in five games this season. The other thing to point out with Arsenal is of the calendar year they have 79 points, and they cannot be caught now, so they're going to end up, for what it's worth, not very much, in 2013 they're going to have amassed more points than any other Premier League team. So to sort of, when we say to same old Arsenal, they've for a whole year now they've put it together and done very well.
Maybe there's a trophy for that.
Podolski coming back is big for Arsenal, I think, because Giroud has something like, I think it's two goals in 14 games, and those two goals were the calamity from Boric, and the other one was a penalty against Southampton.
Wow.
In that game, and he missed quite a few chances yesterday. Good player, but he's not going to win you a league like Van Persie can for United or so on.
The problem for Podolski is that Wenger, for whatever reason, doesn't consider him a centre-forward and has only played there a couple of times, and Podolski's never really... he personally is happy playing that position, but hasn't always been a happy sort of work environment for him there. And I don't think that you can necessarily play Podolski and Walcott at the same time against the better teams. I think you just lack that control. Of course, you gain in terms of impact, in pace on the one hand, in terms of directness and shooting on the other, but then you can't play the Arsenal passing game, because neither of them are good enough to play that game, in my view. And even in the Chelsea game, I think the inclusion of Walcott was meant to be an option to get out of the press in midfield and go utilise the space behind the midfield on the wide areas. But then you could see that Arsenal don't quite control the game as much with him on the pitch. That's why I think with Walcott, it's a double-edged sword. He brings you goals, he has the pace, he can have great effect with the ball, but at the same time I think he kind of diminishes Arsenal somewhat at their best.
Well, Ramsey's out now for what looks like being a sustained period of time. Podolski's back in.
Wilshere's back though after his...
Wilshere's back, right. Yeah. So with Podolski back in and Wilshere back in, and Ramsey out, Arsenal now have to travel to Newcastle, who have taken more points than anybody since the start of November. No Premier League side has won more points since the start of November than Newcastle.
I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, it's a test not just obviously of Arsenal, but of Newcastle too. It's worth pointing out that Arsenal have the joint best away record in the Premier League this season. Ooh. I think it's a really tough one to call. I would hope it would be full of goals, and I'd hope that that Arsenal would, you know, will come through, because I'd like to see them, or perhaps one, you know, I mean, Everton perhaps are drifting away now, but I'd like to see one of the other clubs win it this year, and I'd like to see Arsenal keep going. They'll probably fall away again in March and April because of the size of their squad, as perhaps isn't as big as some of the others. But
the squad might be bigger by then, of course. It might even feature one or two Newcastle players. There's rumours of them being in for Kabay, which it's funny because you'd think, a bit like when Ozil arrived, isn't that exactly the player they've already got?
I think Kabay, perhaps, but I think he's a good sort of defensive midfielder.
So he's more of the...
He can play a bit more like the Xabi Alonso role. He can play the long balls. He can also get into the box. He can score goals. I like him. I think if you're playing five
midfield...
He's a
deeper lying midfielder.
I don't think necessarily Jack Wilshere has improved in the last couple of years. I don't necessarily think Arteta is the person to take you to the next level. I think there is scope there for someone like Kabay to come in.
They need a striker, though. I think that is the main concern. And I don't see Wenger buying anyone else if he can't get that one striker that he feels will really improve it. I can't see him buy another midfielder. I mean, despite all the injuries, they still have a lot of players there. Cassola has hardly played over the last couple of months. He can't get into the side.
He was very good yesterday as well.
He was. And I just don't see him... I don't see them going back for Kabay, and B, I don't see Newcastle selling, because why would they in the middle of the season?
Well, Newcastle are coming off a very big win. Well, they were kind of sort of... They happened to be there when Stoke imploded with a bit of help from a referee.
But for the first yellow, it was a little bit unlucky, but then for Whelan, but then...
Also the moment where Stoke were bombing up the other end of the field, and there was a clear handball.
Yeah, yeah. And referee, I think they went and scored from that, didn't they?
They did indeed, yeah. They swept down the other end. And, yeah.
But that, I think, well, Stoke did get a hammering. What was one positive for them was that Asaidi looks to have a bit of talent about him. That's the second screamer he scored this season. And, you know, we haven't always seen that from a Stoke player in the last few years, but... cutting in and curling one to
the
top
other side, worryingly for Stoke, I think they've now conceded 15 goals in the last five away games. And the whole idea under Tony Pulis, it was very much, you know, you go, you know, try and grind out the draws, or, you know, away from home and then win at home. But, you know, Stoke, while they perhaps are playing a little bit more fluently and more excitingly, they are perhaps not as defensively robust, certainly away from home this season.
I think the Asaidi is actually an interesting one, because... I was talking to someone at Liverpool last year, and they couldn't believe why he wasn't playing for Rodgers, why Rodgers didn't like him. And you'd think he would be such a great addition to this team if they had him now, even as just as an impact player for the last 20 minutes. I think it's a real shame, and maybe they'll regret it a little bit.
Perhaps. Quick prediction then on what do you think is going to happen, Newcastle-Arsenal?
I haven't really looked at it properly, but I wimp out and say a draw, one-all draw.
Really? Rafa, you got a view on this? Do you think Arsenal could... That would be a major, major feather in their cap if they could get the win at St James's, no?
I think they can get the win. I just see Newcastle being a little bit too inconsistent and not disciplined enough to defend against a team like Arsenal. I think they're good against sides that are open themselves. Arsenal, to a certain extent, are, of course, but I just think the quality will come through.
All right. We'll talk about Hull Man United in a second or two, but first this... Hull Man United then. Huh. Extraordinary this. Extraordinary match. Rafa.
It was extraordinary because Hull took the lead very early on and doubled the lead, and you think this is going to be another really bad result and bad performance from United, but somehow without ever really convincing fully, they picked themselves up and got that win, which made a big difference, I think. You'd be talking about inconsistency, now you're talking about three wins in a row and almost sort of a bit of a challenge or a comeback or a renaissance, whatever you want to call it. And I think that was fairly impressive. But at the same time, they were playing Hull.
But Hull, they've been very impressive at Hull.
A couple of weeks ago, and they're hard to score goals. I think no one scored more than, I could be wrong, but I think no one scored more than one goal before at the KC before yesterday. So, yeah, but I think for David Moyes, they've won now four games on the trot in all competitions. Not the hardest opposition. I think the positive for Manchester United that he's being more positive. And when they went 2-0 down yesterday, it was very soon after that. Rafael picked up an injury. He could have brought Vidic on and moved Smalling to right back. Instead, on came Januzaj. The very first thing he did was immediately terrorise Figueroa, win the free kick. They got the goal back, and very soon after that, they were level. Mm. So,
and then he brought on Chicharito, that's right.
Yeah, and moved Rooney back into midfield. So right. He had three strikers on the pitch. It was a bit more Ferguson, because I think early in the season he was making more negative substitutions. I think it was a game against Southampton where they were winning 1-0 and he took off Rooney and brought on Smalling, and I don't think the United fans were too happy about that.
Mm.
Not really what they've been about for the last 25 years or so.
No, indeed not. And Darren Fletcher being back maybe gives him a little bit more licence to do this kind of thing.
Yeah, well, he was just someone out for 2 years, but he was just getting to the ball.
Mm. Magnificent. Says Wayne Rooney, will surprise a few people by losing at Norwich, perhaps, this weekend?
Possibly. I mean, Norwich's record against United has been terrible, I think. It's like two wins out of 16.
Yeah, they won their last season.
But they won their last season. And Norwich is actually, in the Premier League this year, at home, Norwich are pretty good. I think they've won six, drawn eight, and only lost four. So it's not a bad record, but Norwich are playing so poorly at the moment. I don't know. I don't think the fans...
But RVW's
are,
back.
I think the fans are turning against Chris Hughton a bit as well. Yeah,
they've been turning against him since the first day.
Well, but even more so now. And they weren't very impressive against Fulham yesterday. So
that's true.
You would expect United to win.
Well, indeed. And that Fulham defeat leaves them only 3 points above the drop. It's so very, very tight. As I mentioned before, everyone really from Stoke in 10th place downwards, the bottom 11, all within range of the drop. I think Stoke are 5 points above the bottom three. Whew. Yeah. All right, then. Rafa, what do you think? Norwich, Man United? No, not feeling it.
No, I am feeling it. I'm feeling the love for Moyes. I just can't see United not winning it.
Right, okay. Okay. Everton are going to be playing Southampton. What a sickener for Everton, eh? You go a whole year. almost without losing once at home. Sunderland turn up and look what happens.
Who haven't won there for ages as well, Goodison Park. They tend to get stuffed there. A couple of years ago they lost something like 7-0 at Everton, and then that goal was so Wigan by Everton, just a complete calamity.
It was Osman's calamity, though,
wasn't it? Yeah, it was.
It wasn't.
The amount of times you saw Wigan do that under Martinez, trying to play it out from the back and get it completely wrong.
Mm.
There was a goal that Bale scored last season where the keeper just kicked it against him and it went in. But yeah, I guess before that, it was a game they probably weren't going to lose.
And then you
go 1-0 down, lose your goalkeeper, you're down to 10 men.
And the other goalkeeper... Vita Meloni turns into his career performance.
Well, I think that is such a psychological boost for Sunderland, because if they'd contrived to give away that game, especially as Fletcher missed a one-on-one when it was 1-0 as well to make it 2-0, if they'd given away that game to 10 men, it would have been, I think, disastrous for them mentally. But the fact they managed to hold on can give them something. I think they're playing Cardiff tomorrow, so another chance to get a win.
It's interesting that they've now kept three clean sheets in a row. I look at that squad and don't think they're necessarily up to a great deal. That gives them a foundation to build on, and playing Cardiff, you couldn't really want for better opponents probably at the moment, the way things are going down there.
Interesting. Jonathan Wilson points out that Sunderland have now beaten four of the top six this season, if you include the League Cup, which I think you can for the purposes of a stat like that, because it's an amazing stat.
Mm.
I'm not sure that going down to Cardiff is quite the picnic that you suggest it's going to be.
Well, just simply because the whole...
I know they're having a rotten time, but... Cardiff. I mean, they are having...
Sunderland.
Well, no, but they keep doing... Yeah, they're coming off this big...
Go on then, Jimbo. If you were going to play a team away from home in the Premier League now, who else would you want to play?
They already played them and they couldn't beat them.
Right.
Villa are rubbish as well.
Villa. It would be Villa. Should we come on to Villa? There's lots of other teams. There's so much football out there. Southampton beat Cardiff. We're talking about Cardiff and their miserable time. 3-0. 3-0. And the whole kind of Mackay, Willy, won't he, etc. Situation rolls on. But they are hosting, as we mentioned, Sunderland at the weekend. I don't know. could be, you know, a spirited game. Although it was a very muted affair by all accounts. The crowd were quite quiet and...
Well, I think they made more of a protest before the game, where a few hundred of them marched with chanting things about, you know, Tan and saying we're
poor old Vincent Tan.
Come on,
poor old Vincent Tan.
Are you off to?
He's a stranger to our shores, and everyone's rounding on him and bullying him because he's the foreign type who looks a bit funny and wears leather gloves and that.
Are you off to a job as one of his PR funkies?
No, not at all. I just think that Mackay's been a little bit disingenuous, a little bit with this whole business. Basically, Tan's position, and all right, the guy knows nothing about football, I can sympathise with that, but he comes into this and he basically says, this is your money, and then the Moody business, and he gets rid of Moody, presumably because they overspent, which they did when you factor in all the age. No, he said, this is your budget, they overspend. And obviously there was some behind-the-scenes business that went on then. He said, Moody, then you're out. So what happens next is he says, OK, you've overspent. There's no more money to spend. And the manager goes out and says to the press, oh, light it up, I'm going to make some signings, which Mackay knows exactly what he's doing when he's doing that. He's putting the pressure on... He's basically getting leverage over the president, because if you don't come through and give me money, then the fans are all going to hate you. So Tan goes, no, I'm running a business and I just told you don't have anything. I can completely see his position. And now he's being pilloried as the man who wants to get rid of Marky Mackay.
I think the problem is for Tan is that when Mackay's got this clause, his contract, that if he is sacked, he gets a huge whopping payoff, which was the deal was done before he came along. So that's why Tan wants him to resign.
Right.
My Mackay has absolutely no intention.
Yeah.
The thing is, it'd be quite interesting from a legal point of view if leaking an email from your boss might actually constitute grounds to dismiss you without any.
It's a very fair point.
Any
very
payment. Fair point. I mean, we don't know, of course, that Marky Mackay leaked the email, but it's probably
could it be the NSA.
Yeah,
it's probably an assumption that is that we
a lot of interest in the affairs of Cardiff.
But I agree with you, strange enough, James Richardson.
There you go.
I think it's been very one-sided, the coverage, and I think Mackay was playing a political game. And caught out a little bit.
Mackay might know that he will get a job as well. There are a couple of jobs available. Well, certainly West Brom.
Certainly are.
West Ham could be available soon. Norwich could easily be available. He was a former player there.
Mm. Villa could be available. They left the field to a chorus of boos.
Yeah.
After their conceding late on against
sounded
Crystal
loud
Palace
as well. The boos when they were walking off on Soccer Saturday. It sounded quite vicious towards. Well, not no vicious isn't the word.
Right.
Just they didn't sound happy, the Villa fans.
Right. Why would they be?
You can't blame them. Only 7 points at home this season.
Right.
I mean, if they've lost four in a row, I mean, I guess the only positive, if you've got Swansea have been poor recently. I think they've only got 2 points in the last four games. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if that was a 0-0 or another 1-0. I mean, Benteke can't score. Swansea aren't lifting up trees at the moment either. I mean, that all smacks of being a low-scoring, dull game.
Stuart James, who watches loads of Villa, probably watches more than any of us do, really doesn't like what Lambert is serving up at the moment.
What's wrong with it?
Just the football, he says. He says no. He wrote about this. I remember him writing about this earlier on in the season after they lost to Newcastle. And this was, I thought, seemed a bit odd at the time because they just beaten Arsenal and almost beaten Chelsea quite well against Liverpool as well. They'd had a hard start. They lost to Newcastle at home, and he just said there's no creativity in this side. It's all just pace and directness. But when they have to break down a side, they don't really know what to do. And actually, I think he's kind of been proven right since then, because they've been awful in the last few months. And to lose to Palace at home is really worrying for them. And Benteke hasn't scored since September, I think since that Newcastle game. And Wyman and Boglahor as well aren't doing anything either. So defence isn't great. They are vulnerable.
Right. It's why they're much better away from home, because at least when sides come onto them and attack them, they can sometimes hit them on the break. But yeah, I agree with you. You would not be backing them at home, even against a team like Swansea, who are struggling.
You like your odds should. So who have you got to go down right now? Sunderland, I know.
I backed Sunderland, West Brom at the start.
But
of the
now,
season.
if you were placing bets now, who would you put your money on?
It's
because
really
West Ham
tricky.
Have dropped into the bottom three now.
Yeah, but the thing about West Ham is that they're going to be down there all season. But how many people really think that Allardyce is going to go down?
There are a couple of things to consider. One is the January transfer window.
What do you mean?
He's never been relegated. I think he's made so many mistakes.
Everyone's never been relegated until they get relegated.
But some people do it more often than others. When Glenn Rhodes is your manager, then you know you're going down. Avram Grant's your manager, fine. But Allardyce, right. If they hold their nerve, I think keep him. Then
all right, and presumably Andy Carroll's going to come back at some point.
Yeah, there is. You know, the horse placenta will work at some point. Right. So.
Yeah. Tony Pulis has never been relegated, of course. How long has he been at Selhurst Park? Four, five weeks?
Six games. And he's got 9 points, which is more than the Holloway and Millen got between them.
Right.
So he's done well.
They're out of the bottom three now. Remarkable stuff. And
I mean, I wrote a piece a few weeks ago saying, is there any chance Palace could stay up? And I tried to put the case for reasons why they could, and I didn't really believe it myself, but now they're...
What did you come up with, Sean?
Well, just looking at historically, actually, of the teams after 10 games that were bottom, in the last 10 seasons, five of the teams that were bottom and several points adrift after 10 games had actually survived. Right. There's a few other things as well. You know.
He's been boosted by the return of Dwight Gayle, of course, but it's interesting how he's getting the strikers striking Gayle and Chamakh.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also defensively, if you're not conceding many goals, I know lost three against Newcastle, but generally, if you're not conceding many goals, they've always got a chance. And I think actually it's been a little bit more subtle than perhaps in those early days at Stoke. And they've played reasonable football occasionally too. So.
Well, he's not really got the players to play like he did at Stoke. They've got a lot of little fast players in many positions. And Palace were never getting stuffed at any point in the season apart from against Fulham. And I saw them live once this season and they weren't outclassed at all against Southampton. They ended up losing, but they've never been far away.
Hmm. All right. Now, West Ham, Jacob, taking on West Brom this weekend, who themselves are drifting down into that whole quagmire thing. But they got a point away to Spurs, which is a very good result, but not so much for Tim Sherwood on what was supposed to be his kind of triumphant home unveiling as the new permanent manager of Tottenham. If you cut him, what's he bleed?
White and blue.
White and blue.
Let's get that checked out.
Yeah, yeah, very, very possibly. Very possibly. Were you taken aback by Sherwood's 18-month contract?
What the suggestions were originally that he would get to the end of the season. I suspect because they weren't able to get the managers they wanted, particularly De Boer, they decided to go for Sherwood. I guess if it doesn't work out and this season ends up being a write-off, then they could always revisit these things in the summer, and then they've only got to pay Sherwood off a year's contract. So I think they're being pragmatic about it. They accept they couldn't get anyone now. So
they could have got in Alan Kirbyshe.
Yeah, your old mate. Yes, he's got a technical director's job at Fulham.
He certainly has. And look at the Kerbs effect. They go to Carrow Road, get the victory.
Can he still do his stuff on Sky Sports News?
Oh, I don't know. Because he's quite a regular...
Because he's been on there for 5 years.
Yeah, but he's been. He's also been on this thing that I do, Premier League TV, visible in the rest of the world, but sadly not in the UK. And he's really good on it, I have to say. He's really good. And he's very illuminating. And he does all the things with a touchscreen and a Pierrot, with a little device you draw arrows on the screen with, that the likes of Match of the Day really never reach. So it'll be a great shame. I presume he's got to honour his commitments, because I should be seeing him there on Tuesday. I don't know who's going to do it if it's not going to be him. It's not going to be me, that's for sure.
Can I just come back to the Sherwood thing for 1 second? I mean, I understand that it was probably very difficult to get the manager that they wanted, etc. Why are you laughing?
No, I'm just thinking.
Why are you smirking?
I'm not smirking.
You're lining up pun, aren't you?
I'm not doing anything about puns. Right. Anyway, it was hard to get the manager they wanted.
Yeah, but... Yeah. And Sean is saying, yeah, they're taking a pragmatic approach. They're trying out Sherwood. If it works, great. If not, it's not going to cost them too much to get a room. That's all fine. The problem is, I think, what perhaps they didn't look at, is that this is really the chance this year. That's how I see Spurs, and that's how I see the Premier League. I think next year, you can't expect Man United to struggle this much. Liverpool will look stronger, probably. Chelsea, in the second Mourinho year, and then something happens, will be even harder to beat. And Man City had a dodgy start to the season, and they will probably be more settled as well. So I think this year is really the chance for Spurs. And to give it to a novice, I think, might not look like a risk in terms of financial, on the financial side, but is a risk in terms of what you miss out, potentially, in my view.
But who else was there? I mean, I don't disagree with that, but who else was there on the market? I mean, Glenn Hoddle was the set, you know.
No, it's a fair point. It's a fair point. So anyway, so then Alan Kerbisch is now in charge. He's now the DT. He's now come in to help Molenstein. In much the same way that Molenstein came in to help Martin Jol.
No, he was a coach.
Ah. But yeah, but he was still in the wings.
They're completely different roles.
I'm just saying.
DT's up here.
Yeah.
Coach is below the manager.
All right, but he's someone already embedded in the organisation. Just in case. Yeah, because well, I'm not sure. Otherwise, what's he going to do? It's funny as well, because Kerbisch is someone who's always railed against this business of having a sporting director. I mean, he had that major court case against West Ham because of all the...
Yeah, that came in sort of, I think, halfway through Kerbisch's reign, if memory serves, which...
Well, they sold a lot of players that... he was able to sue them for constructive dismissal because their activity on the transfer market, effectively, the courts ruled, left him unable to fulfil his role. So it's interesting that he's now going to be having that, more or less that kind of role for a manager himself.
Doesn't surprise me, though, because Shahid Khan is very much into his analytics and his stats.
Mm.
And obviously the way the NFL do things, they have a sort of manager director and they have a head coach, and it's sort of broken up that way. So I think he's trying to introduce a similar model.
I can understand he might bring in that model, but it's interesting that he brings in somebody who's very much from the managing side of it rather than the DS side.
Kerbs is probably desperate to get away from you and away from Sky Sports News and back into a football club, so he'll probably bite his hand off.
Right.
Truth of the matter is that to be technical director, sporting director, general manager, whatever you want to call it, is one of the cushiest jobs in football, because if you play your cards right, you can be there for years and always find another manager to pin the blame on. Also, if you're very good at your job, you make a lot of money for your club, going to be appreciated almost regardless of the results. So it's a great job to have if you're up for it.
Part three. Ooh, posts. Let's have a look. Joe Deasy Vancouver. Ah, the problem about the pronunciation of Guangzhou is that it's actually happening in two different dialects of Chinese. If you were to say it at Guangzhou, as it appeared, that would be the Mandarin way of saying it, you see? Mm. But the dominant language in Guangzhou is Cantonese, which is as similar to Mandarin as English is to German, which actually... Joe Deasy Vancouver is quite similar, it being Anglo-Saxon. But anyway, back to your post. He continues, therefore much confusion is in the air about the nitty-gritty pronunciation. There you are. It wasn't me being stupid. I was just going with the Mandarin rather than the Cantonese. Again. Yeah, that's all the posts this week. Sean.
We were talking earlier, because you're the world's strongest man is on going to Channel 5. I know you don't want to mention it, but I was wondering, because...
8:15. Channel 5.
When I speak to other athletes that go to China, they are warned not to eat any red meat.
Right.
Because if they do, it's often pumped full of steroids and they can get tested for clenbuterol and get positive.
I think the key word here is tested.
I was wondering how stringent the procedures were.
What they eat isn't so much a problem from a testing point of view, because there's not, as I know, a great deal of testing. But, funnily enough, red meat, a consignment of beef, proved catastrophic. Catastrophic. For pretty much all the competitors.
In what way, James?
It led to a... It didn't agree with them.
Are we talking about chafing in the...
No, we were talking about just the total evacuation of the bowels, which, you know, when you're, you know, dicky stomach... And we've been through this and everybody knows...
When you're trying to pull a big
Yeah, but
big
even
truck.
If you're not, in that kind of heat, that's the last thing you want to do is you know, have the runs... I don't think, and a lot of people are asking, when do we get to see the guy doing it on camera? And I don't think that actually makes the edit. I think they may have taken the scissors to that bit. So, sorry about that. Anyway, that was the post. And here... Oh, I know what we want to do. We want to talk about transfers, because, Rafa, I bet you've got lots of things to tell us. You haven't. Okay, the first thing to say is, no, Marco Reus is not going to Manchester United. Doesn't matter how many times people say he might be, then he's not, is he?
He's not.
There you go. Who else is
going? Can we just clear up once and for all to all the millions of listeners that the release clause that's been much written about only kicks in summer 2015. Ooh. So whenever you read about release clause or anything like that, just throw it in the bin, because it's just not relevant right now. 2015.
In the meantime, we still hear about that Royce one every day in the papers. We still see talk about Lewandowski maybe being available. I mean, that's all done and dusted, isn't it? It's Bayern Munich.
2nd of January. 2nd of January. The official announcement will be made. Even The Guardian.
Is he going in the summer? Or
There's no chance.
So who might be going somewhere? I know you said in the past Kagawa wouldn't be going back. So are there any big German moves we should know about? Either to or from or within?
But the thing with January business is, believe it or not, German clubs don't like to do it because they feel it almost reflects badly on them.
It's poor planning.
On poor planning, yeah, and not doing their homework properly. It's unusual for clubs to sell because they find it then hard to buy. There's not really this wheel of dealer culture in January. I do believe, though, if somebody were to come in with a serious offer for Adrian Ramos, who's a leading goal scorer with 11 goals and 17 for Hertha, a Colombian, a deal could be made, although Hertha in a decent position.
Because there was talk about Arsenal, wasn't there? You mentioned Arsenal possibly.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal, he denied having had any contact, but I think he has been scouted. The problem is he's not full international yet. He hasn't got any EU passport. You might argue that he's an exceptional talent and will be eventually an international, which has been done before successfully with different with similar cases, but at the moment it would be quite difficult to get a work permit from in the UK, so that makes him less attractive for the Premier League. But there was even talk of Dortmund and maybe making a move, because they've been going throughout the whole season with one striker, Lewandowski. Luckily enough for them, he hasn't been injured. Julian Schieber, the only replacement they have, is not really the same standard, and with them being involved in the Champions League potentially quite a bit longer, because they've got a very winnable tie against Zenit coming up in the last 16, they might be tempted to make a move, because he is of course free to play in Europe.
All right. There's been quite a bit of Manchester United, apart from that Royce thing, other transfer suggestions, like they might be in for Alessio Cerchi, who I think would be excellent business. He's racking the goals up for Torino. Looks excellent every time we've seen him play for them. And Torino are a club who would be very happy to sell for a large pot of cash.
Isn't there talk of him going back to Roma as well?
There had been talk of it. I think Man United, I might be wrong about this, but I think Man United might be able to offer more, even with the Glazers leeching funds out there. Out of their accounts, like nobody's business. But also, he wants to play Champions League football, apparently.
But Rome will be there next year, won't they?
But I think he might want to play it now, as opposed to after World Cup and all that. I know Sid, if he were on the line, would laugh at the suggestions that they're about to bring in Koke from Atletico Madrid, Man United. But I see a rumour as well that they might be in for Lallana, Adam Lallana. I find that surprising. Other rumours? Liverpool in for Basel's Mohamed Salah. Everyone loves him, don't they?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Surprise nobody. I'm sure he'll be a hot property.
He's really good.
Yeah. Mm. He's got 17 goals in 26 games for Egypt. Mm. Chelsea, this Guarín story still goes on. Do you understand that?
No.
No.
Because Guarín is not a centre forward.
Mm.
And he's not going to solve their goal scoring problems. He is a sort of a busy number 10.
Hmm.
Number 10 is almost kind of defensive number 10 who likes to work quite hard.
And he's not all that special, is he?
No. Hmm. No, he's a worker.
Right.
So
the suggestion is in the papers that they're now going to send Demba Ba, who is a striker, plus cash, to Inter for Freddie Guarín. I'm sure Inter themselves at the Christmas party may be raising a glass or two to Chelsea.
I find it amazing.
Hmm. Right, okay. Also, it's talk they might re-sign that fella, Matic. Do you remember him who scored the Puskas goal of the season thing for Benfica? It was an extraordinary succession of headers that eventually falls to him and he volleys it in from the outside.
Didn't Benfica quote him €40 million in the summer?
Oh.
Or something outrageous like that. I think Abramovich balked at the principle of it because they let him go.
He's a defender, isn't he?
No, he's a box-to-box midfielder. He is, to be fair, he is the midfielder that Chelsea really need. Perhaps not this season, but going forward, because I don't think you can play Mourinho football necessarily with the midfielders that they have. There's just not this drive and this power that they used to have. We don't know if he still wants to play it that way. He denies it. He says he wants to change a thing. I personally don't buy it. I think that's the way he loves it, and that's the way he's always was set up. But I think the Matic thing is they let him go for next to nothing or nothing. Mm. So to then buy him back for €40 million.
Who is their director of football, their DS or whatever?
Emanolo.
Michael Emanalo.
And he's about as Teflon as it comes, or not?
Look, I mean, with him, there's a question of how much power does he really have, because most of the recent deals have been directly negotiated by Marina Granovskaya, who is the right-hand woman.
Who you never hear mentioned at all.
No, you do see a name crop up. Okay. She's been negotiating the big deals for the players. And, of course, that means Abramovich is effectively buying these players. So,
right. So
Emanalo might have some kind of advisory role, but he's not going to be the guy who says, I want to play at XYZ, and then Abramovich signs the checks. That's not the way to set up.
Mm. All right. Okay. Also, we mentioned the suggestion they might be splashing $22 million on Kabay. I've got Pedro in a question mark here. I imagine that must refer to the Barcelona Pedro.
Pedro, yeah.
That would be a hell of a signing, wouldn't it? The top scorer for Barcelona this year.
It would be, but Sid will have a better view of this, but I just can't see Barcelona selling a player like that mid-season.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would be the point?
What indeed? And Hull are ready to make a record-breaking swoop for Sunderland's Stephen Fletcher. How about that? Sean, you're not moved by any of this talk.
It is only talk at the moment.
Well, so. It is, but that's because we've only got... How long? We've got 5 days to go, is it?
Are you angling for Jim White's job now?
No, I just... It's quite exciting when the transfer window comes around. Don't you find it exciting?
I still barely recovered from the August one.
Right.
Because that seemed to be sort of jumping the shark a bit.
All right.
I mean, I think the last day or two will be quite interesting, but apart from that, I think it's just a lot of hot air, and I think there's so much... This season is so good and so interesting. And,
right.
You know, I'm quite enjoying that, to be honest.
All right, well, we'll finish the pod there, then. You're right, Sean. Should have concentrated on the football. And it was good football, wasn't it? Well, here's to a terrific weekend, then. Wow, you say it's getting less tight. I insist that it's never looked as tight
numerically
as
and factually less tight.
Yeah, but there's, you know, there's a certain kind of dynamic behind it beyond the facts
is,
and figures.
It's relative.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Raphael. And on that note, thanks for finally producing a note worthy of finishing on. And that's it. We'll be back, though, on Monday. Here, Monday, yep, with a roundup of the weekend's action. Look forward to the next round, which is coming up on New Year's Day. It really is relentless. Many thanks in the meantime to Sean Ingle, to Raphael Honigstein and Jacob Steinberg, and producer Ben. And we'll be back with you on Monday. Have a super weekend.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.